From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of July, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing here in Champaign County. We'll turn our attention in the middle of the show to the Hemp Research Open House held last week right here on this campus and talk about the industrial uses for hemp. And then as we close out our time, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too, not only here but across the planet, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day at $3.91¾, a settlement price up 2.5 cents. December at $4.12¼, a penny and a quarter higher, and the March at $4.29½, 0.75 cents higher. Soybeans in the August 14 lower at $9.67¾. September 9.75¾, down 13¾, and November beans at $9.95¾, 13¾ cents lower. Bean meal futures down $1 for the day. The bean oil $1.04 lower, and the wheat futures soft red in the December at $5.44¼, 5¾ cents lower. The hard red December at $5.42¼. It finished 2¾ cents lower on this Wednesday afternoon. Greg Johnson from TGM, Total Grain Marketing, the elevator right here in Champaign County that belongs to FS GrowMark, now joins us to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us on another Wednesday. Tell me about the market as you see it today.
The market is responding to the weather. We continue to get rains. There was some high wind damage up in parts of the Dakotas and Iowa, but the market seems to think that was a relatively narrow band where those high winds went through. And so I think the feeling that the market is that the rain benefited more than what the winds hurt the crop. So based on crop ratings, we're looking at some of the highest ratings we've ever seen. And some of the private analysts that use those good to excellent ratings are coming up with anywhere between 183 and 186 bushels to the acre. We are 9 trading days away from the next USDA report, when they will probably change the yield, or could change the yield, and we'll see how much they increase it from 181. See if they go to 183 or if they go even higher than that. But we're 9 days away from that. Another negative, the government lowered feed demand in the July report by 75 million bushels. They'll probably need to lower the feed demand again. Cattle on feed numbers were 98% of a year ago. Trade was looking for 99. So we are feeding the least amount of cattle in over 70 years. And I know we're feeding them to higher weights, but that still doesn't make up for the lower number of cattle overall that we're feeding. So feed demand is weighing on the corn market as well. The yield is weighing on the corn market as well. We could see that carry out increase maybe. It's 1.7 billion basically today for this coming year's crop projected carryout. That could be 1.9, maybe even 2.0. Hopefully, we can keep it below 2 billion. Psychologically, that is a big number if they it would increase the carryout to over 2 billion bushels at this point. But right now, though there's rain in the forecast for us, even this afternoon, there's been rain coming across the Midwest as we speak. So it's just hard to get the market excited when it's raining as much as it's been raining, and the crop ratings are as good as they are.
Is there a different or similar story to tell for soybean?
Well, it's different in the fact that we don't know what the yield is going to be on soybeans. We feel relatively confident on the corn because we're past pollination in most areas, and it appears that other than a couple of varieties that maybe got planted at just the wrong time, that, you know, the tassel wrap affected a little bit of that. I think that's a relatively small amount from what I hear, so not enough to impact the overall size of the crop by very much. So the corn is probably out there. The beans, the jury's still out on that. We will need rain in August. If we get to 2 to 3 to 4 inches of rain in August, I would anticipate a pretty good bean crop as well, but we don't know that yet. But the flip side is we do have some halfway decent export demand for corn, some very strong exports for corn. We do not have that on soybeans. We really need to get China to buy some U.S. soybeans. They bought a lot of beans from South America, have not bought bushel one yet from the United States. And the recent news out of Washington is that the trade talks between U.S. and China have been pushed back or extended, I guess is the correct word, extended for another 90 days. So if they take the full 90 days, that gets you into October, and bean harvest will have already started. And we don't have enough room to store both the entire corn crop and the entire bean crop. We really need to see soybeans move in the fall. So hopefully we can get some kind of a trade agreement worked out prior to harvest.
How much of an issue is that for an elevator like yours? I assume you have to start to plan for it.
Exactly. Yeah, and basis levels were extremely weak the last time that that the trade war happened between the U.S. and China back in 2018, and basis levels probably weakened as much as 40 to 50 cents from normal type basis levels in the fall. Now, I'm not predicting that that's going to happen to that extent again, but certainly the path of least resistance is a weaker basis, not a stronger basis, especially if we can't move those soybeans in the fall. So talking to farmers, we're talking about playing defense and maybe getting basis locked in just to prevent, from having to take an extremely weak basis on October 15th when the soybeans are coming across the scale.
Yeah, so you believe you'll have storage space because you'll put the corn outside, I assume.
Oh, exactly. We can always put corn on the ground, but the old rule of thumb is when you start seeing corn piles on the ground, expect basis to get weaker because it costs money to put it out and to pick it back up, and you're taking the risk of that corn possibly going out of condition. So all that costs money, and so that tends to lead to wider basis levels, not stronger.
Does demand in the United States remain strong for corn, relatively speaking? I know you talked about feed demand maybe slipping. Ethanol looks like it should be running along nicely.
Yeah, ethanol's steady. It's mandated. We have to use so much ethanol in every gallon of gasoline. I don't think the drivable miles are increasing very much. And with a few more electric vehicles all the time, gasoline demand is steady at best. And so ethanol demand is steady at best. So ethanol demand looks good. That's not changing. Exports look good. But the biggest component of corn demand is feed demand. And we really need to see, hogs and chickens are okay, but we really need to see cattle numbers start to pick back up. And that's not going to happen overnight. That's more like a 1 to 2 year process, unfortunately.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next Wednesday.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. The 2018 Farm Bill provided a legal pathway for the production of hemp in the United States. Researchers here on the University of Illinois campus have been working to improve the crop and develop production techniques. This summer, they held a hemp research open house. David Lakeman from the Illinois Department of Agriculture kicked off the event. I talked with him about how the state took interest in hemp.
Illinois is almost perfectly designed for hemp production. One of the things I mentioned is that in the course of the Second World War, right as the United States entered the war, many of the areas that grew hemp for industrial purposes fell under enemy control. So the Philippines and Ukraine are two of the greatest areas for hemp production, at least they were at the time. And virtually overnight in late 1941, both of those places were unavailable. So the United States Department of Agriculture launched a program called Hemp for Victory, which encouraged U.S. farmers to grow hemp and step into that void. And Illinois farmers stepped up, and between 1942 and 1945, grew almost 20,000 acres of hemp, which supported the war effort. It can be done here.
Hemp for Victory.
Those are the closing credits from a 1942 film by USDA titled Hemp for Victory that spurred production of hemp across the state of Illinois and the Midwest. It is something David Lakeman, who is the Cannabis and Hemp Division Manager at the Illinois Department of Agriculture, hopes can be recreated.
And I want to see, one more area for our farmers who are struggling, who are dealing with multiple challenges, to have this crop that can is so versatile. It can grow on looser, rockier, more acidic soil that other, you know, cash crops cannot. It is great at absorbing things from the soil. So before marijuana was made illegal in the 30s, farmers would line their fields with hemp because it would absorb heavy metals, lead, mercury, arsenic, pesticides. It would absorb those out of the fields so that you could grow your corn. All right, there's a million different uses for it. And I want to make sure that Illinois not only has a thriving industry, but it continues to be a leader in industrial hemp production.
Of course, the United States government during World War II was spurring production of hemp for its fiber. What industrial uses do you believe it will have in today's world?
Again, it's virtually limitless. So to answer your question, yes, during the war, again, rope was one of the chief uses for it. An actual battleship, so an Iowa-class battleship, would use about 30,000 feet of hemp rope. And then, of course, less for a cruiser or destroyer, but, you know, something similar. We also used it for the production of uniforms, especially for export to the Soviet Union, which had used a lot of hemp grown in what is now Ukraine to make their uniforms. Now, given the state of science, there's so much more it can be used for. So you can make hempcrete, which is versatile, it is light, it is fire retardant, it is extremely useful. You can turn it into plastics. I have in my office at the Department of Agriculture a set of plastic silverware that is made from hemp material. You can make oils out of it. You can use it for cloth, for paper. There's a really great used bookstore downtown Springfield, and they have, called the Prairie Archives. They have, you know, all these newspapers that go back to before Illinois was a state. And it's interesting. You go through those looks, those papers, you can find when Illinois, when they moved from making hemp paper for those newspapers to wood pulp paper, because the hemp paper is still clear as the day it was printed. It doesn't need all the protection that the wood pulp paper does. It maintains its character. It stays stable. So, I mean, if you could do that and start replacing, you know, lumber production with hemp paper, it's both more sustainable and has the benefit of sticking around longer. It's more stable as a product. So again, there's virtually limitless applications. And I think that's part of what, you know, that's part of why what the U of I is doing is so important. It's why, you know, this program is so important, because we're just now learning what all we can do with this plant. And I want to continue to support those efforts.
Why are you here to participate in a University of Illinois Field Day? What purpose does it serve?
You know, I think every one of the state universities now has a hemp program. They're incredible resources. They're pushing the science forward in a way, you know, that many other states are not doing. You know, there's a long history, not just here at U of I, but also at the Agriculture School in Carbondale with hemp and cannabis research. I mean, they have a very long history. And so making sure that we're utilizing these incredible resources that Illinois has to bring to bear on it, they're here. We're here. And that's part of why, you know, the department wanted to be at this event, is to showcase our support and raise awareness of what these programs are doing.
That's David Lockman from the Illinois Department of Agriculture. He serves as the Cannabis and Hemp Division Manager there. He attended the Hemp Research Open House held on the University of Illinois campus in July. Let's take a look at the global growing regions. Drew Lerner is here now. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hello, Drew. Thanks for being with us again. I like to talk about the cool weather, but let's start with just weather in general and what you're watching as we wrap up the month of July and turn the calendar to August. What things are of interest here in the United States for you?
Yeah, in the U.S., probably the key is whether or not we will shift gears out of this wet bias in August. You know, everyone is pretty much satisfied with the corn production issue with a few issues, of course. But I think everyone's on the same page with the idea that the rain has been sufficient enough that whatever yield we're going to get is going to end up being locked in here. But we do see the potential that we could be drier in August. You know, this summer really has been kind of an almost normalish summer. We've definitely been wetter biased in quite a few areas recently, but the eastern Midwest has been a little bit drier biased. And when you step back and look at the upper air wind flow pattern, there hasn't been any real serious blocking patterns. So it's been kind of a typical summertime weather, not that we know what typical is anymore. But I think that there's potential that we may see an August that turns a little bit drier with time. And it could turn a lot more drier depending on what happens in the tropics. And that's something that we want to watch pretty closely as we get out into the second and third weeks of August. I think the Atlantic will fire up and we'll see a lot of weather systems lined up, poised towards moving in our direction. And as a result of that, if that actually verifies, we could end up allowing for more ridginess a little farther to the east, giving us a little bit more dryness and a little less rain in the month of August. So parts of the Midwest could dry down a little bit more. You know, in a normal August, if we get normal rain, we usually see some net drying. Just usually too warm in August to really be able to counter evaporation. So I think no matter how you slice it, we're going to be a little bit drier at the end of August than we are now. And if the tropics fire up as they should for the middle 2 weeks of August, I think there's a pretty good chance we may have a few greater pockets of dryness around. Absolutely not will we have widespread droughty weather. We will get back into some thunderstorm activity. I just don't think it's going to be quite as juicy out there as it is now.
Why at the beginning of August will we be cool?
You know, we've been watching this 45-day cool cycle since last October. And this is one of those intra-growing season patterns that only lasts for a year. And it is still cycling. And because of that, we're a little bit concerned about September. But this pattern has come and gone. If you think back, we've had some shots of cool weather periodically since the middle of winter. But in the spring, this was something that happened a little bit more often than what we kind of thought. And so for that reason, we've had, you know, really good crop conditions. But there's been times when the northern plains have seen only 60 degree temperatures in the last 30 days. And now we're going to see some 70s up that way, 70s in parts of the Midwest. So a very impressive cool air mass. It should abate as we go into August, and it will return, I think, sometime in the in September. And for that reason, I think there is at least a little bit of interest that we could see some early frost and freezes in some areas, especially eastern Canada. And eastern Canada prairies, that is, and some locations across parts of the uppermost Midwest. But that is speculation for now, but I do think this pattern will repeat again.
You just sent a shudder through those producers in the Dakotas and Minnesota, and maybe put a smile on the face of producers in Iowa and Indiana. We'll have to wait and see what that looks like in mid-September. Turn your attention, though, now to some other places. I haven't checked in with you for a couple of weeks. We have been watching France and then parts of the southwestern areas or southeastern areas of Europe. Which had suffered through some dryness and droughty hot conditions. Have things changed in the last couple of weeks?
Actually, there hasn't been a tremendous amount of change. We did get some rain to occur very briefly in France and the UK, and that helped things out just a little bit. But we're back into the hole again, and we don't expect rain of significance in France or parts of the UK for at least the next 10 days. And we can say the same for parts of the lower Danube River basin, which is southeastern Europe. Now, that area there did just get some rain over the past couple of days, so there has been some relief in that area, but we are going to see that come to an end and go back into the same pattern that's been dominating the growing season in Europe. So we are going to continue that. Now, it hasn't been real hot in parts of France in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So they haven't suffered quite as much as they had before, but there's still not much moisture in the ground. So the crop is still struggling in unirrigated areas. And we do expect the warmth to start coming back in again next week, probably in the second half of the week. Nothing extreme, but just enough to keep the edge of stress on these crops for a while longer.
Anything else that we should be watching in that part of the world?
For Europe, probably not. In the western portions of the former Soviet Union, we also have some dryness in the Black Sea region, down in southern Ukraine, and from there eastward into parts of western Kazakhstan, including Russia's southern region, at least the southern parts of the southern region. And that area is fairly important for summer crops. There's a lot of coarse grain and oil seeds produced in that region. The dryness has been really good for the harvest of winter crops, and so that moved along just fine. But there are some of those dry land summer crops that are pretty stressed at the moment. The top and subsoil moisture is pretty short, and there's a lot of stress going on. And to make matters all the worse, between that and the ongoing war, southeastern Ukraine is being plagued by locust infestation right now. And there's a video out there on the internet showing the population of these locusts is just phenomenal. And so that's another problem that is facing some of the Ukrainian production.
Oh my, that would be just awful to have that many insects swarming at one time, especially if it's coming, you know, on top of dry and droughty conditions. I can't imagine anything worse as they finish off a crop that's already in poor conditions. Other places, we have not checked in on Australia for a month or two, I think.
Yeah, you know, Australia's actually doing a lot better. They had a pretty decent rain distribution over the last week. It started about a week ago from today and went through this past weekend, and it's now wound down. But there was good widespread rain. Now, if you recall, the first several weeks of the autumn planting season for wheat, barley, and canola were marked by unusually drier, biased weather. And they were planting with the anticipation that it would rain eventually. And it did rain eventually, but it was a few weeks late, and the crop has been subjected to some cooler weather. So we're not as well established as we ought to be for those three crops. And this rain that came up will actually turn out to be of great benefit when we do start to warm up a little bit more as we get into late August and September. And we believe that there's enough moisture out there now, and maybe they'll get a little bit more to stimulate some new root and tiller development in the wheat and barley crop, and to just help the canola crop get a little better established before aggressive spring growth starts to occur. So I think Australia is definitely not the crop that it ought to be for this time of the year, but they do have potential for further recovery because of the rains that have occurred recently. But one last comment, we still need more moisture. There's still a lot of the country that is low on soil moisture.
Hey, thanks much. We'll check in with you again next week.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Don't forget to register for tomorrow's tax event for farmers related to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Bob Ray will bring you up to speed on all the changes. You'll want to get yourself registered. You can do that right now on our website. Look for the One Big Beautiful Bill Act tax webinar from the Farm Doc team in the calendar of events. You'll find it in red. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.